Greetings. This obviously has happened before. It's happened where it lasted for some time, and obviously it concerns me. You know, just there's this woman I love that, you know, I committed my life to, and she committed her life to me and whatnot. Anyway, I wanted to let you know what happened Saturday. I had a delightful conversation with my friend Chris. Went on for at least an hour. We went into some scripture and got on some issues that was insightful. Then I left and took a hike. And the intent was to drop off some stuff at the recycle place and continue on to Publix. You know, man needs his bananas. But on the way, I passed by Miss Lillian's house. Not only was she there, her son was there. So I turned in and we talked. And we talked. And we talked. But the thing is, I talked mostly with her son. And we got in some fairly serious dialogue about current events and about theology. So I found that interesting. The depth wasn't as strong as with Chris, but there was a willingness to engage, which was encouraging. But it lasted such a long time, it was kind of like, okay, it's getting late, and it's going to get dark. So I did go to the recycle center. I did not go to Publix, because that would have added another good bit of time. So I did turn around, but you know, I still needed my bananas. So I stopped at the local store and got some bananas. I stopped at a local Mexican store. Then I figured, okay, I'm here. I went to another convenience store that's just basically across the street. That's where I get my water, bottled water. Got a couple gallons of bottled water. And I have a friendly conversation often with the gentleman. He's an Indian fellow. His family owns the place. And it's probably the longest and most in-depth conversation I've ever had with him, because he was born in India. Been here a good 20 years, but... And we discuss the issue around, what do you think? Was this a hit piece that the BBC did against Modi, the prime minister? And so we talked about that, and it was a reasonable conversation, which I thought was delightful. So there, you know, a third conversation, I thought, this is a good day. I get home, and of course, you know, I'm home late, and the obvious thing, obvious requirement is a smoothie. So I prepare a smoothie. But, you know, the eggs and the banana are in, and it's time to go to the next step, and the phone rings. And then I'm on the phone for another hour plus with my friend, my friend in Utah. And we had another delightful conversation, and this one was, again, a little bit more serious. So I had four conversations in one day. And I felt the Lord's blessing, because they're radically different. And a lot of it was not fluff. And that was a real encouragement. It was really a real encouragement. One of the things that I find so important is in the dialogue I had with my Mormon friend, one of the things he asked me about is describe the Trinity. And that was delightful, because obviously we don't see eye to eye in that. Because one of the discussions was on the line from Joseph Smith, as God once was, man now is, as man now is, whatever it is, something that nature that he can become, you know, it's cause they have the doctrine that you can be effectively become God. So it's something we do not see eye to eye on. But again, the joy I have is that we do not share the same foundation, but we share a willingness to engage. And that was delightful. And I'm really wondering, you know, because I have such a short, I have hardly any, nothing to do during the day, right? But I really wonder about, because I'm trying to think about how to explain my understanding of the Trinity. Because, you know, the version versus, you know, the Mormon version, the what you see in the Quran, what you see in the, what are they called, the Oneness Pentecostals, the modalism, where God changes from one thing to another, and things of that nature. And when I would contend, it is. But anyway, I've pondered that. But there was a delightful conversation. And part of the issue that was so important is what we need to do is get down to the fundamentals. We so often talk at the fluff, but don't get to the fundamentals. So a while back, a couple months ago, I wrote an email, and what I've done is I've redacted it a bit because I think it is something that gives you, it's an attempt on my part, and I'll put the text in on the web, but I'm going to read it because I'm striving to get better at doing this, to explain, okay, we have an issue, but let's look at it completely, not just a single thread of it. Because I think that's where we make huge mistakes. When we talk of who Jesus is, when I talk with, well, my Mormon friends and so forth, if we talk at the periphery, he has some friends that he's dealing with who are a woman who is a Jewish rabbi. And I might think, oh, interesting. So the issue is, we clearly have fundamental differences because we had this discussion about a text that he read in reference, and I described it before, in reference to Abrahamic faiths. And I think the issue is a Jewish rabbi woman is not following the Abrahamic faith. This particular thing was addressing because obviously with Biden went to Ukraine today, and there is a whole bunch of things relative to that has occurred. So this was on Ukraine, and I really wonder if this is a better technique, because there's history with this in context, I hope. So let me read it, and you can tell me, what do you think? On the political side, it seems wise to have an understanding of the history and present day. While Ukrainian history dates well before the Soviet Union, there were significant changes made during that time in order to make sure the country was not a cohesive culture. The East, as we see it today, was to varying degrees part of Russia and clearly Russian in culture. The West was part of Poland, politically and culturally. This was done to keep the population's focus and be part of the USSR, not part of Ukraine. So I'm going to add my comment here. Because, you know, the point is, what we see today is not the way it's always been. And the way it is today, or has been in recent years, was not done because that was the way the culture formed or the country formed, but it was imposed upon. So I really think that, you know, so we don't take an assumption that these people, you know, the idea that it's a democracy is, yeah, right. Okay. Post the fall of the Soviet Union, there was clearly a lot of turmoil. What is most relevant for today is the revolution in 2014. It was not a simple internal event, but orchestrated by foreign powers with numerous objectives, including to be a thorn to Russia. There were numerous names that were directly involved in the overthrow of the government, including George Soros and his Open Society organization. Joe Biden was noteworthy, as he stated publicly before a Council on Foreign Relations meeting, of the power he asserted over them. Hunter Biden received a $50,000 a month no-show job on the board of Burisma Holdings Limited that was used as a wedge to maintain influence with Biden and the U.S. Victoria Nuland was noted with her F the EU statement as part of the State Department's successful orchestration of the overthrow. And, you know, one of the things I find fascinating is, you know, like I say, I remember watching that Council on Foreign Relations meeting because I was more frequently watching those things. And this was before he actually ran for president, I think. And I thought, you know, that what he said, I thought was the end of his political career. And of course he became president, you know, so what do I know? But the other thing is when we hear, it's often talked about Victoria Nuland's statement. It's always the F, the EU. This noted, but it's the whole thing. What is the whole thing? We're going to put this person in this position. We're going to put this person in that position. And for the most part, it happened. So if you think that the people in Ukraine put in power, the people that were put into power, yeah, right. You know, and the same thing was true, you know, because that was a while back. Then later when Zelensky was put in, he was put in by Kolomoisky. Because again, I suggest this the same way that Ronald Reagan became such a noteworthy fellow is because he could deliver the line. He was an actor. And so he was, you know, he had the tagline, the great communicator. And I think that's what Zelensky has. He was a comedian and a popular comedian in Ukraine. And so he knew how to deliver a line, and that's why he was chosen. You know, because again, he starred in a TV program where he played the role of a comedian who was elected president, and then he lived it out in real life. So, was that done on purpose? There was obviously some suggestion it was. Anyway, continuing. The events around the 2014 revolution was done by external agitators bringing opposite sides together, fueling hatred between them, and then literally gathering them into a crowd and killing random people on both sides to cause a serious riot. This was and is a stage play with lives on all sides being casually discarded to gain power. You know, because, you know, again, the Maidan revolution was orchestrated externally, and there's a whole lot of documentation on how external forces literally killed people in order to agitate both sides. And it's kind of like, we don't look at that right now. We look at this, the government in place that this is the people, what the people want. They're democratically elected, this one party state, democratically elected. Yeah, right. Again, democracy is another issue. Anyway. After that, there was also the need by the military-industrial complex to restart a conflict somewhere as the cash cow in Afghanistan failed. It is worth noting that the U.S. funds the dozens of biological labs in Ukraine since they do not come under U.S. oversight. This is identical to the lab in Wuhan, China, which, you know, again, I think is an important issue, but anyway. The Ukrainian government has been widely known as the most corrupt in Europe, but now they are praised by the media in the West. They're often called a beacon of democracy, but they are a one-party state. Opposition parties are outlawed. News agencies that do not support the party line are shut down. Political leaders that drift from full support are imprisoned or assassinated. To make this clear, there have been political leaders assassinated and their bodies put on display in town squares as a warning to others. When a member of the peace envoy was too flexible in talks with Russia, he was also assassinated. The fascists or Nazi groups such as the Azov Battalion and Reich Sector are not just a fringe, but a central part of the military and government. The veneration of Stefan Bandera remains strong today, mostly in Western Ukraine. These are not pleasant fellows. They are typically easy to pick out, as it is common for them to have numerous tattoos with swastikas or other symbols of the Third Reich. Perhaps this is where it gets more of a concern. You know, again, the issue here, it's not that it's kind of behind the scenes, behind the curtain, it's right there out front. All the things that we are venerating as, oh, it's important to have the will of the people, you know, a democracy. Again, you know, it's kind of like I can, well, it's the, you know, I've done the natural effect, you know, because that I have some great videos on that, the satire videos about natural, because natural has no legal meaning. Therefore, we can say this product is all natural. Natural. It's made completely processed, but it doesn't matter. It's all natural because the ingredients that were processed are naturally occurring. So we can use that phrase. Well, in the same way, we use the idea of saying, oh, democracy, democracy, democracy. even though there's absolutely, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And so, you know, Ukraine as a beacon of democracy is kind of like, Continuing, the Ukrainian government outlawed the Russian language. Consider the impact of outlawing Spanish in the U.S. Do you think there would be a bit of a backlash? Consider if you are part of the culturally Russian people and the government, including Zelensky himself, calls you animals and worthy of slaughter. That would be like if an agreement is reached, the Minsk Accords and Minsk II, and you find out from numerous foreign heads of state that it was all a ruse to give time to build up the military to annihilate you. What would it be like to go from 2014 to 2022 being bombed by the military of your own country and over 10,000 of your people die? What is it like now when the U.S.-made arms are used to directly target civilian population and continue to kill thousands of your people because you are culturally Russian? What would it be like to have thousands of petal mines dropped into your communities to target the young who see them as toys and blow off legs or kill? This is part of why there is tension. You know, and because... Again, to me, it's really a strong analogy. Outlaw Spanish in the United States. See how well that goes over. You know, because, you know, consider that as an analogy and look what happened. That happened. I've heard some people make the case, and I don't know the veracity of this, that the Russian language is actually more popular than the Ukrainian language in Ukraine, or at least has been, but it's been outlawed. And I find this fascinating because, you know, it is like going to Canada. A whole lot of people in Canada speak French. English is more common, my understanding, but French is quite, you know, quite common. So you're going to outlaw French? How will that go over? But then there are the culturally Ukrainian people. What has been the impact on them? Perhaps a good frame of reference is here in the U.S. How easy is it to look at another group, hear from numerous sources that they are bad in some way or a threat to you? They are Muslim or Mexican or Black or Jewish or Democrat or Republican or followers of Christ. Those messages have been a part of the message sent to the Ukrainian people. Consider an example of a state-sponsored news anchor stating on TV, I can allow myself to quote the words of Adolf Eichmann, who said that in order to destroy a nation, it is necessary to destroy, first of all, children. He was referring to destroying Russians. If you're Ukrainian and hear these kinds of thoughts constantly, it sinks in. How easy is it to look at a Black man or Hispanic man in the U.S. and not have the influence of those who deride them as less than human in your mind or even in your heart? You know, I think about that because obviously I've addressed the issue of both Black and Hispanic because that's the most common thing I interact with. And it becomes really easy to say, to look at a person, oh, that Mexican, that Black man, whatever, and just kind of write him up because I've classified him in some way. It becomes easy to do. Oh, that Russian. Same thing. Now, the issue is, am I writing them off on things that are based on something that's untrue? And I would suggest, more often than not, yes. Then consider deception. The major news media in the West is an overt propaganda gang. It does not matter if it's Fox News, MSNBC, or CNN. They're bought and paid for. They are called the Mockingbird Media because of Operation Mockingbird. The intelligence agency's connection to the media today is as strong as ever, and that includes Twitter, Facebook, Google, and the like, which is my field. What we are told in reality are radically different. But you can trust your government since they never lied to you about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, chemical attacks in Syria, babies tossed in incubators, the attacks in the USS Liberty, the Gulf of Tonkin, and of course the unprovoked attack by Japan. If you believe any of those lines from the government, I have wasted my time. See, The thing that that has become so clear, and obviously this is the whole point of things like Shofar Leaks and whatnot, or the Shofar Nexus by itself, is if you fund something, an organization and whatnot, you can then control it, and then they can control a particular narrative. And one of the groups you want to fund is, the entertainment industry, and of course the news media and so forth. But you don't want to do it overtly. You want to do it kind of behind the scenes. So that's why your news media is brought to you by Pfizer. And that's why they're so honest and tell you about... Anyway. And again, I gave this list of things. All of them are demonstrable lies. You know, especially, you know, consider the last one, the unprovoked attack by Japan. You know, because I think about how Roosevelt delivered the unprovoked attack line when he declared war on Japan. It was provoked. He lied. He simply lied. And, you know, so that's our norm. It's not U.S. only that does it, but that is our norm. It's the norm of a government. You can see the technique used if an event occurs and is reported in one way. The evidence has shown that it is false and it quickly out of the news. Sometime later, when few remember that it was false reporting, it is mentioned again to fuel a narrative. A blatant example is the mass graves report. A U.S.-born reporter, Eva Bartlett, simply went to the gravesite and found the report was false, not only in one site but multiple. However, in the minds of most, the idea of mass graves remains. There is a long list of these that I can provide. The point is that the media is being used to control a narrative that is simply not based on reality, but to fuel hate and keep the population in fear of others. When you live in fear, you turn to the state for protection. That is the point. You know, this is one of the things I've seen so often. An event occurs. It comes to the news. And then it quickly moves away, especially when somebody's pointing out, look, it's false. But then you can go back, gravesite thing was easy to think of at the time, the Buka massacre. It's repeated over and over and over again today. The evidence for the fallacy of it is overwhelming. But we don't want to go there. We have the narrative. It is, our favorite villain, Klaus Schwab, you know, of the World Economic Forum. One of the things you hear him talk about is to control the narrative, or to develop a new narrative and things of that nature. And that really is the focus. We want to get people thinking one way. And it's a problem. Oh, is it a problem? Then move on to slavery, mostly sex slaves. In our modern times, we frequently use the term human trafficking to soften what we are talking about, as it is a broader term. While it is a huge issue, as in 40 million plus in abject slavery, it is a bit more common in places like Ukraine. I have photos on my wall, and I've written about Oleg Melnikov, who freed over 1,900 slaves before it appears he to have been killed in Ukraine. It is not that all Ukrainians are or use slaves, but the industry is very present there. What is present with that kind of industry is an attitude of callousness towards life. There's a willingness to use others for your gain. Deception, harm, or death is a common price. With the various deception techniques, controlling the narrative, the cultural degradation. There's apparently been a very strong cultural degradation within the country of Ukraine. So what you do with that is you cheapen the value of life. And when you do that, you can move people to the focus of, I want money or pleasure or whatever. And that's a problem. There was more to this, but We'll call it redacted. But see, the point of going through that exercise is I want to figure out how, one, to my own kids, obviously, when you look at an issue, not to look at, oh, just what's the current, oh, the Bucha massacre, the Russians are bad. It's fraud, but don't say that, because the Russians are bad. They lie, everything they say is a lie. So the Bucha massacre, Bucha, whatever. No, I'm sorry. That was stopped by the ghost of Kiev, the pilot ace who shot down all sorts of, right. Yeah. All this, all the fraud. There's been so much fraud, but you have a narrative. And my issue is I went through a long list of things, try to give numerous examples in order to say this quick, simple narrative that Zelensky is good and he's a noble man and Putin is Hitler. There's a problem with that narrative. And the issue is it's not a binary thing. It's not that Zelensky is bad and Putin is good. But you've framed it to make it that Zelensky is, the second coming of Christ. I'm sorry, he's not. He is a foul man. And he is the greater liar in this case. The whole point of this is because, if you can do this in Ukraine and that issue, you can do this with Christ. It goes back to my interaction with my Mormon friend on the Trinity. If it's kind of like, we're going to look at one word, Trinity. And you say it's this, I say it's that, and we're going to go off in our different ways. The thing that I did with him Saturday is say, okay, what is the Trinity? And where do we see it in the Bible? And part of the foundation was let me start with, well, Genesis 1. I went through a lot of things in Genesis 1 because we see the Trinity in Genesis 1. But there's this completeness in the text, especially he's talking about his Jewish rabbi associate. And they have the Tanakh. But Jesus is in the Tanakh in the Old Testament. And I gave example after an example after an example of where Jesus is in the Old Testament, starting with Genesis 1. And I really think, because one of the things I've pondered doing is putting a list together of just the verses that I know of, that I say, this is clear in the Old Testament, the Lord walking through the garden. And Adam and Eve said, oh, look, he's there, let's hide. That was Jesus Christ. That's unambiguous. And so many examples like that. There are other examples. Well, for example, I look at the Enoch thing. Enoch walked with God and was no more. And you kind of wonder about the language. Is it that he had a intimate relationship with God in the sense that we are called today to walk with God? Or is it he physically walked with Jesus Christ? And I think it could be either way. So what you would do is, if we use that as an example, we say, all right, here is this example of Enoch walking with God. And perhaps somebody Either because there's evidence somewhere else that I'm unaware of, or they simply become convinced because of, you know, some authority has said that what I say is true or false, either way. You don't build a doctrine, that whole doctrine on that you, that here, if I give, 10 examples and you build your foundation on just one, that's dumb. When there's multiple examples, you don't build everything on the one example, because there may be a misunderstanding. And the same thing is true is if you find, if we find in, well, my favorite book, 4th John, if we find a verse there that shows clearly that it was that walking in the sense of a knowledge relationship, not a physical walking relationship, we find some reason for that. Or somebody just, says, well, that's what I think, and therefore, I'm going to throw out all the other examples. That's foolishness. But I think the important thing is, if I can set down here's the list, and if I give you a list of 10 to support my evidence, and you say, okay, 8 of them I'll agree to, but 2 of them, one I'll say is shaky, the other one I'll say is no. Do you then throw out the whole argument? Then it's the, answer fool, answer not a fool. There's no way to win because you're dealing with a fool. But I do think handing somebody that tool, because those who want to know, oh, indeed, I see the evidence of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament, because here's 10 examples, and I'm convinced on 8 of them. The other two, again, maybe one is maybe, the other is, I don't think so. But the other 8 are solid. And the fact that the one is I don't think so has nothing to do with the other 8. It doesn't disprove them. So I want to give those tools to somebody without saying, look, I'm going to tell you by my authority that this statement is true. Jesus is in the Old Testament, period. Don't ask questions. Not at all. I want to be able to present, here's where Jesus appears in the Old Testament. Here's the things. And even maybe state this one because of the Enoch thing. You can perhaps interpret it this way. You can interpret it that way. And, maybe if there's evidence, there's this verse that says, that gives weight to this way, this verse gives weight that way. I think those kind of tools would be great, because not to be the authority, but to tie things together to allow somebody else to say, okay, you set the evidence before me, and I'm going to verify the evidence. I want to do that. It's the example with the Ukraine thing. I want to set this in front of my kids and others, saying, okay, I think Zelensky is wonderful, or I think Putin is wonderful, or whatever. Here's some evidence. Does it fit your narrative? Or does it destroy your narrative? And, or is it there that will help modify the narrative in your mind? And of course, the whole point of a lot of this is, in this particular case, I gave this list of the lies of the U.S. government. The Gulf of Tonkin. Let's say you find out, aha, the Gulf of Tonkin really did happen. It was not a lie. It did happen. Even though, what's his name? McNamara, the Secretary of State at the time, or Secretary of Defense at the time, said, yeah, we it didn't happen. he said that, 10 years, 20 years afterwards. But you come out and say, okay, one of these is wrong. Therefore, you trust the government. You say, okay, I gave you five, six, seven, whatever, examples. And you say, well, one of them is wrong. Therefore, I trust the government. Wow. Anyway, I'm striving to understand how to do this, want to do this well, and I don't know how. And I want to do it quicker, and 35 minutes, great. Anyway, I had I was really encouraged Saturday. Four conversations of some substance with Chris, where we're basically on the same page, but we went really, really in depth on areas that we weren't on the same page on, because we were both exploring. What was this? How do we, you know, anyway. But to explore in depth is wonderful. Then to talk with another gentleman who, it was far more surface, but there was a willingness to go a little deeper, and it didn't end. So, and we touched a whole lot of subject. It was marvelous. Then to talk to someone, even though that was the shortest conversation of them all, but somebody about something, you know, especially here, I'm Joe, you know, American. I'm talking to a guy born in India, and I can come up to him and say, I know something about your country. And I'm asking you, was this information I've heard about your country true or false? Not, I'm going to tell you about your country. No, not at all. But this is what I hear, because again, because I have it, the BBC, something about Modi, whatever it's called. And I watched it and I said, okay, I can see where, without knowing the truth, the full truth, you can easily edit the information that's set forth to fill an agenda. So I don't know. So I asked somebody who was born there, and that's delightful. Because I'm not going to take a stand on this because I don't know the issue well. But I'm willing to ask. And I think that willingness to ask and just say, I know something a little bit about your country. And I'm not your authority, but I want to hear from you. That was delightful. And then I really think probably of the four, yes, I really enjoy the depth with Chris. Really enjoy that depth. But to talk to somebody seriously, we don't have that mutual shared foundation. He's a follower of Joseph Smith. He comes out with his foundation, and he will tell me his foundation and hear my case for my foundation. And we interact. We don't insult each other. We celebrate with each other a friendship that is fantastic. That is really, really fantastic. But anyway, before I get one of these mammoth visits, well, one other thing, just real quick. You may be aware, apparently it didn't make the news basically at all, but over the weekend, I think the bulk of it was on Sunday, Rage Against the War, a march on Washington, D.C., a march to, Washington Monument and I think it was there, where they had the big pool and whatnot. They had some speeches and whatnot from, and the great thing about it was they had people who foundationally disagree. They had people from the political left, political right, libertarian, socialist and whatnot. Completely different foundation on a lot of issues, but they agree on not being for war. They had a list of demands that they agreed on. I'll just read them real quick. Not one more penny for the war in Ukraine. Negotiate peace. Stop the war inflation. Disband NATO. Global nuclear de-escalation. Slash the Pentagon budget. Abolish the CIA and military-industrial deep state. Abolish war and empire. Restore civil liberties. Free Julian Assange. And to have people from diverse political backgrounds get up and say, we stand on these principles. That group's pro-life, that group's pro-choice, that group wants socialized medicine, that group doesn't, and so forth. But we stand on these 10 issues in agreement. And I found that fantastic because that's not the norm. That happened, and of course, the major media has to ignore it. You don't want people to know about this. But it's, rageagainstwar.com or something of that nature. Anyway, you know, like Ron Paul and Medina Benjamin, whatever, radically opposite politically, and they both were speakers there saying, let's stop the war. You know, anyway, it's fascinating. I didn't, you know, I only saw brief reports. I didn't listen to any of the speeches and whatnot, but I just find that fascinating. But so I had four delightful conversations, dialogues, Saturday. What a joy. I went to the bank today to, got to the door, opened the door, and, oh, wait a minute, it didn't open. Why is that? Why didn't the, you know, am I here too early or whatnot? No. Holiday. Anyway, but I got my bananas and cheese. Marvelous. I want to teach my kids to think, to be able to explore information, to look, to discern. Again, so many times when you see the idea of making a choice, whatnot, it is really the idea to discern. I want my kids to be able to discern right from wrong, truth from fiction, and whether or not Jesus Christ is who he claims to be. The model they have set before them is no, listen to the institution and shut up and sit down and write your check to us. And of course, don't talk to your dad. Which will probably be an issue come Thursday. My lady, my wife, I love our kids. I love you and I want you back.